Usually when you think about a fortress, there's this expectation of physical boundaries.
Right, yeah, like a stone wall.
Exactly. You build a massive stone wall, you dig a deep moat, and the guards just point outward and say, "There is the perimeter."
Yeah.
Inside the wall, you're safe. Outside the wall, you're in danger. It's clean and comforting.
Very clean.
But then you step into the modern world of critical infrastructure and cybersecurity, and suddenly that stone wall is entirely invisible. And worse, the attackers are finding loose bricks you didn't even know were there.
It's just, I mean, it's an entirely asymmetric battlefield today. The concept of a hard perimeter has basically evaporated because our networks are just so interconnected now.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are exploring how the cybersecurity landscape is radically shifting due to AI and how organizations are unifying these really complex government frameworks and modern software to defend both digital and physical infrastructure.
Yeah, it's a huge shift.
It really is.
Yeah.
And we have a pretty dense stack of sources today. We're pulling from technical blogs on VMware Cloud Foundation, often called VCF, along with some really deep dive architectural guides from VPSO.
Right, the VMware Professional Services Organization.
Exactly. They're essentially the elite field architects who actually build these massive defense systems in the wild.
Yeah, the ones getting their hands dirty.
Right. And we're also looking at three heavy-hitting special publications from NIST, the National Institute of Standards and
Like
Technology.
gold standard.
Literally the U.S. government agency that writes the gold standard frameworks for cybersecurity. Specifically, we're looking at NIST 853, 800-207, and 882.
And, combining those elite field architectures with the rigorous government standards, it tells a rather fascinating story about survival in a modern digital economy.
It absolutely does. And whether you are managing critical infrastructure or prepping for an IT strategy meeting or just, insanely curious about how hackers are actually kept out of power grids and manufacturing floors, this deep dive is designed to shortcut your way to being an expert on modern network defense.
It's a lot to cover, but it's so important.
Definitely. Okay, let's unpack this, starting with the elephant in the room, the immediate catalyst forcing this massive shift in how we defend networks.
Right. Artificial intelligence.
Yeah, AI.
Because the initial industry testing of frontier AI security models against, production code, it's producing vulnerability findings at a volume and velocity that just completely breaks historical norms.
It's wild.
Yeah, I mean, we are dealing with an entirely new baseline of threat here.
And it's not just finding one big hole in the wall, right? The
Yeah.
sources talk about this concept of vulnerability chaining.
Yes, chaining is key.
To me, it sounds like a burglar noticing a slightly loose window, an old ladder lying in the yard, and a burnt-out street lamp.
That's a good way to put it.
Right.
Because individually, they are just minor home maintenance issues. You might put them on a to-do list. But combined.
Combined, they equal a highly successful, completely undetected break-in.
Exactly.
And what's fascinating here is how the AI actually executes that chaining. I mean, historically, a human hacker might notice those three minor misconfigurations, sure.
Yeah, if they had enough time.
Right, but visualizing how they connect across a massive corporate network takes immense time and effort. AI uses automated graph theory.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it maps the entire network topology in literally milliseconds. It plots thousands of potential attack paths simultaneously.
So it sees everything at once.
Exactly. It sees how a low severity flaw in, say, a printer driver can connect to a misconfigured internal server, which then provides a stepping stone right to a critical database.
Jeez.
It calculates the exact mathematical path of least resistance.
So the adversary is moving at machine speed, calculating these incredibly complex multi-step attacks before a human analyst even realizes the first step was taken.
This is the reality, yeah.
Which totally explains the massive push in platforms like VMware Cloud Foundation 9.1 to fundamentally change how infrastructure operates.
They have to.
Yeah. The sources highlight that they are moving to an accelerated pace of patch delivery and building in hardware-level security, like leveraging Intel QAT, to accelerate encrypted vMotion.
That's a really critical feature.
I want to pause there, though, because that's pretty heavy on the jargon. Let's break that down for a second. vMotion is the ability to move a live, running virtual machine from one physical server to another without dropping a single application session, right?
Yep, that's exactly it. It allows operators to balance workloads or perform hardware maintenance totally invisibly to the end user.
Okay.
And historically, you would obviously want to encrypt that traffic as it moves across the wire so an attacker can't just intercept the data in transit.
Right. But encrypting massive amounts of live memory data requires incredibly heavy cryptographic math.
Oh, it's brutal on the processors.
Yeah, if you force the main computer processor, the CPU, to do all that math, your system performance just tanks.
Yeah.
The server spends all its time doing math instead of, running the actual business applications.
Which brings us directly to Intel QAT, or QuickAssist technology.
Right.
This is dedicated silicon. It's hardware specifically built to do nothing but that cryptographic math.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so by offloading the encryption workload from the main CPU down to this specialized chip, vSTUSF 9.1 can move these encrypted live machines seamlessly.
Without slowing anything else down.
Exactly, without degrading the performance of the actual business applications running on them.
It's like hiring a specialized accountant just to handle the complex tax math, freeing up the CEO to actually run the company.
Perfect analogy, yes.
But even with hardware acceleration and faster patching, trying to outpatch an AI feels like a losing game. It's like playing whack-a-mole at light speed.
It is a losing game. If we connect this to the bigger picture, patching is merely a tactical reaction. You need a structural philosophy to actually withstand these automated attacks, and that is where those three NIST special publications come in.
The frameworks.
Right. They aren't competing standards. They serve as the three foundational pillars of a modern defense architecture.
I love how the VPSO guide breaks this down into three simple questions. First, you have the what.
Yep, the what?
That's NIST SP-800-53. Think of this as the master catalog of technical controls. It's the massive, exhaustive list of what you need to achieve. Things like enforcing access control, ensuring system integrity, and, protecting information at rest.
Right. Then you need the how.
The how.
And that is NIST SP-800-207, which is widely known as zero trust architecture.
Yeah, zero trust.
Yeah, it's the operational philosophy mandating a shift away from that old castle and moat perimeter you mentioned earlier.
Like the invisible wall.
Exactly. Zero trust just assumes the network is already compromised. The core tenet is never trust, always verify every single connection, every single time.
And finally, the where. That's NIST SP-882. This provides the specific guidance for operational technology, or OT, and industrial control systems. It translates those digital IT security concepts and tells you where and how to apply them when you're dealing with systems that control the physical world.
Things like water treatment plants or power grids and factory robotic arms.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so NIST 800-207 is the how. Zero trust. I mean, I hear this buzzword everywhere.
Oh, everywhere, yeah.
But let me push back on this a bit. Never trust, always verify sounds phenomenal in a white paper.
Sure.
But in practice, if a company suddenly decides they're going to rigorously verify every single packet of data moving between thousands of servers, how do you actually implement that without completely freezing the business?
You mean the operational side of it?
Yeah, it sounds like an operational nightmare. If an admin flips the zero trust switch, doesn't the CEO's email suddenly stop talking to the email server?
Well, yeah. Attempting to implement zero trust overnight is a guaranteed way to break critical business operations. You just don't do it like that.
Right.
The VPSO architects are very clear that it is a phased security journey. And
Yeah.
what's fascinating here is they execute this journey using a deeply integrated tool called the vDefend Distributed Firewall.
Okay, vDefend. But to be clear, this isn't a traditional hardware firewall, right? It's
Yep.
not a physical box sitting in a server rack with a bunch of blinking lights.
No, not at all. The genius of the distributed model is that the firewall exists completely in software.
Oh, okay.
It is instantiated directly in the hypervisor, sitting right on the virtual network interface card, the VNIC of every single workload.
Oh, wow. So it's attached to everything.
Exactly. In zero trust terminology, this acts as the ideal policy enforcement point. Because the firewall is bolted directly to the virtual machine itself, the security policy follows that specific application wherever it moves across the data center.
So the firewall is literally everywhere at once.
Everywhere.
But back to my operational nightmare concern. If I'm a network admin staring at thousands of servers, where do I even start without accidentally blocking legitimate traffic?
You start with visibility. Stage one is pure assessment.
Makes sense.
You cannot secure a landscape you cannot see. So the deployment begins with security intelligence, which passively analyzes the network traffic and creates this dynamic visual map of exactly who is communicating with whom.
Like drawing a map of this city.
Yes, and it generates a blast radius report so you understand precisely which systems would fall if a specific server was compromised. You map the entire territory before you ever write a single blocking rule.
Okay, that makes sense. Map the territory so you know what normal looks like.
Exactly.
Once that map is drawn, and I know, say, the CEO's email needs to talk to the server X, what's the first actual security move? I assume you lock down the crown jewels first.
Yeah, you secure the foundational infrastructure. That's stage two.
Right.
Every enterprise network relies on a core set of maybe 10 to 15 services to function at all. Things like Active Directory for user authentication or DNS for routing network traffic.
Okay, yeah.
If those core services are breached, the attacker essentially holds the master keys to the entire kingdom.
Game over.
Game over. So you utilize the distributed firewall to establish a hardened perimeter directly around those specific infrastructure servers, explicitly allowing only necessary secure protocols and dropping literally everything else.
You put an armored vault around the master keys.
Exactly.
Okay, so core services are locked down. But what about the broader layout of the company? I assume you wouldn't want a road developer downloading a sketchy package that somehow exposes the live customer database.
No, definitely not. And that leads to stage three, macro level segmentation.
Macro level.
Right. You establish strict, uncrossable boundaries between major environmental zones. So a development zone must be completely severed from a live production zone.
Makes sense. Keep the sandbox away from the real thing.
Exactly. If a threat actor compromises a testing server in dev, the distributed firewall guarantees that the threat cannot pivot, jump zones, and access the live production environment where the actual customer data resides.
So we've mapped the network, armored the core services, and separated the big environments.
Yeah.
That brings us to what the sources call the holy grail of zero trust, right? Stage four, application level or micro segmentation.
This is the really powerful stuff. This is where you ring fence specific application tiers down to the individual port level.
Okay, give me an example of that.
Sure. Consider a standard three-tier application. You have a public-facing web server, an internal application server processing logic, and a back-end database storing the sensitive records.
Classic setup.
Right. You create a granular policy dictating that the web server can only communicate with the application server and only on port 443.
Very specific.
Extremely. Furthermore, only the application server is allowed to speak to the database, perhaps on port 1433.
So if a hacker exploits a vulnerability and completely takes over that public-facing web server,
the attacker is geographically trapped on that specific machine.
Yeah, seriously.
Yes. If they attempt to run a command to ping the database or extract data from it, the distributed firewall sitting on that web server's VNIC drops the traffic instantly at the source. The blast radius of the attack is physically contained to that single compromised web server.
That is incredibly powerful.
It really is.
But, you know, segmenting digital web apps and databases is one thing. What happens when these cyber threats target the physical world? We're talking about moving from IT information technology into OT operational technology.
Right. And this brings us right back to the WARE framework NIST 882.
Because the stakes are totally different.
Dramatically different. When you transition from managing databases to managing physical valves, chemical sensors, heavy turbines, and robotic arms, you are no longer just worried about a data breach.
Right. You're talking about real-world consequences.
Exactly. You are dealing with physical safety, environmental hazards, and massive operational continuity.
The sources rely heavily on the Purdue Enterprise Reference Architecture, commonly known as the Purdue model, for segmenting these industrial environments.
Yeah, it's the standard.
And reading through it, it sounds exactly like a highly secure government intelligence building with incredibly strict clearance levels.
That mental model tracks perfectly with the architecture, actually.
Okay, walk me through the levels.
So level zero is the physical floor, the actual sensors, motors, and valves.
The loud stuff.
Right. Level one contains the intelligent control devices, like programmable logic controllers, that directly manipulate those valves.
Got it.
Level two is the supervisory control level, where the human operators sit looking at their control screens. Level three is site operations.
Okay, so that's all the plant floor stuff.
Yeah. And then moving up to level four and five, you enter the carpeted offices, the business logistics, and the corporate IT enterprise network.
And historically, the ultimate security strategy for OT was simply to take a pair of scissors and cut the wire between level 3 and level 4, right? Completely air-gap the physical plant from the corporate IT network.
That used to be the gold standard, yeah. Air gapping.
But the sources are very clear. Air gapping is dead.
It's totally dead. The modern industrial economy simply cannot function on air gapped systems anymore. Businesses require immense amounts of data. I mean, you cannot optimize a global supply chain or run complex predictive maintenance algorithms on a factory turbine if you cannot extract the telemetry data from that physical floor up into the corporate cloud.
Well, that makes sense. You need the data to run the business efficiently.
Right. So the industry has been forced to shift from absolute physical isolation to a concept called secure convergence.
Secure convergence. And that convergence happens at what they call the battleground level, level 3.5.
Yes.
The industrial DMZ.
The IDMZ, exactly. This is a dedicated buffer zone sitting directly between the IT network and the OT network.
Okay.
Its entire purpose is to enforce security policies and prevent any direct communication path between the corporate enterprise and the fragile industrial systems.
But this raises a question for me. If level 3.5 is the choke point, why not just deploy a massive traditional hardware firewall appliance in the DMZ to inspect the traffic?
Because of the management access.
Yeah.
The critical flaw with legacy monolithic hardware is how you manage it.
What do you mean?
To configure that firewall or update its rules, the corporate IT administrators up in level 4 need to extend an administrative management connection directly into that highly secure zone.
Right. So you are intentionally building a back door for the IT guys, just hoping a hacker doesn't find it and slip through the same door.
Exactly. Which is just an unacceptable risk in critical infrastructure.
Okay.
This is why VMware AVI Load Balancer is deployed here, utilizing a fundamentally decoupled software-defined architecture. It severs the brain from the muscle.
Okay, let's unpack this decoupled architecture. The brain is the AVI controller.
Right.
This is the central control plane where all the management, policy creation, and analytics take place. And because it's decoupled, you can deploy the controller safely up in level 4, the IT enterprise zone,
yeah,
exactly where your network admins already work.
Yes. They never have to reach down into the secure zone.
So then the muscle consists of the service engines.
Exactly. These form the data plane, doing the actual heavy lifting of inspecting and routing the network traffic. You deploy these service engines down in the level 3.5 industrial DMZ. The brain in level 4 simply pushes the instructions securely down to the muscle.
So the admins are insulated. But how does that physical traffic actually get inspected down in the DMZ without creating a continuous wire from IT to OT?
Because the service engine operates as a full proxy. This is vital.
A proxy, okay.
Let's say a corporate IT system needs operational data from an OT historian server down on the plant floor. The IT system initiates a network connection.
Right.
But that connection does not route to the OT server. It routes to the service engine in the DMZ, and the service engine completely terminates the connection right there.
It stops the connection dead.
Dead.
So it's not just filtering traffic as it flows by, it's physically breaking the chain.
The chain is fully broken. The service engine then takes that incoming data packet and runs it through a deeply integrated web application firewall, or WA.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it inspects the payload for any malicious code, SQL injections, or just anomalous patterns. And only if the traffic is deemed completely pristine does the service engine initiate a brand new, entirely separate connection from its own internal interface down into the level 3 OT zone to retrieve the requested data.
Yeah, it is brilliant. It's like a secure biological airlock.
Oh, that's exactly what it's like.
Yeah, you walk into the first door and that door locks behind you. You stand in the middle, you get decontaminated, scanned, and scrubbed. And only when you are proven clean does the second door open into the sterile room. There is never a moment where both doors are open simultaneously.
Yes, and that mechanism is precisely what prevents a fast-moving ransomware worm on the IT network from simply gliding down into the physical control systems.
Right.
It rigidly enforces the Purdue model's segmentation philosophy while simultaneously allowing the business to extract the operational data it needs to remain competitive.
Okay, I need to push back on this architecture a bit, though, because I have a major practical concern here.
Sure. What is it?
We are putting all this software, the VDefend distributed firewalls, the AVI service engines, right in the middle of the communication paths for incredibly critical power plants and manufacturing floors.
Yes, we are.
What happens when a new zero-day vulnerability drops and we have to update that security software? In the IT world, updating software means rebooting servers.
Right.
But in OT, downtime is measured in millions of dollars. Or worse, physical safety risks.
Absolutely.
You're telling me you can swap out the software in this middleman proxy while live industrial traffic is flowing without dropping the application session? How? What happens to the network state during that update?
I mean, it is a massive engineering challenge, but AVI solves it through an architecture called Elastic High Availability, specifically utilizing what they call N plus M mode and zero downtime rolling upgrades.
Okay, walk me through N plus M mode.
Okay, so N represents the active service engines processing live traffic. M represents additional fully spun up standby capacity in the cluster.
Standby capacity. Think of it like having active players on a soccer field and fully warmed up substitutes sitting on the bench.
Exactly. That's it. So when an upgrade is required, the AVI controller, the brain, doesn't take the whole system offline. It selects just one active service engine and signals it to enter maintenance mode.
But wait, that service engine is holding live active connections between IT and OT?
Yeah.
If it goes down, the state drops and the application crashes?
Under legacy systems, yes. But the AVI controller orchestrates a graceful migration here.
Oh, graceful.
Very. Before that targeted service engine goes offline, it replicates its state tables and seamlessly migrates all of its active application traffic over to the other healthy service engines in the cluster, including those warmed up substitutes.
Really?
The handoff is instantaneous. No TCP connections are dropped. The application session stays perfectly alive.
Wow. So the substitute takes the field mid-play without dropping the ball.
Basically, yeah. And then the isolated service engine is updated with the new software, rebooted, and verified as healthy by the controller.
And once it's healthy?
Once confirmed, it is brought back into the active rotation, and the controller simply moves to the next node, rolling through the entire cluster one by one.
That's amazing.
The plant operators, sitting at their level 2 control screens, don't experience a single flicker of latency. The network literally patches and evolves itself underneath them while maintaining continuous operational uptime.
Here's where it gets really interesting. We've talked about the theory, the frameworks, the architecture.
Right.
But the VPSO guide actually walks through a scenario of what happens when this entire unified architecture is put to the test against a real modern attack. Let's look at the ransomware scenario.
Oh, this is the ultimate stress test of the converged IT-OT architecture.
Definitely. Imagine a utility company running a critical regional power grid. They have fully implemented VDefend, AVI, the Purdue model, and Zero Trust.
The whole stack.
The whole stack.
Yeah.
The attack starts the way it almost always starts in the real world.
Yeah.
Human error.
Naturally.
An engineer in the IT department falls for a highly sophisticated AI-generated phishing email.
Happens every day.
The attacker spills their credentials and gains access to a corporate workstation up in level 4. The attacker is officially inside the wall.
Right. And the attacker's ultimate goal here is extortion via ransomware. But to command a massive ransom, encrypting a few IT laptops isn't enough.
Not at all.
They know they need to threaten the actual power generation capabilities. So the moment they land on that level 4 workstation, they begin internal reconnaissance.
Looking around.
Looking for a pathway down into the SCADA control systems.
And SCADA stands for Supervisory Control and Data Acquisition, right?
Yes.
These are the deeply embedded systems in level 2 that actually monitor and control the physical grid hardware.
Right, the really sensitive stuff. But remember the micro-segmentation phase of the Zero Trust journey?
Oh, right. Stage 4.
The VDefend distributed firewall is sitting directly on the VNIC of that compromised IT workstation.
Oh, I see where this is going.
The attacker attempts to initiate an RDP connection remote desktop protocol, basically trying to remote control another screen or maybe an SSH command line connection to an engineering server located in the OT zone.
So they're trying to pivot.
Hmm?
But the distributed firewall intercepts that request and immediately references the zero trust policy.
Exactly. It asks a definitive question. Does this specific IT workstation have explicit pre-approved permission to communicate with that specific SCADA engineering server?
And the answer is unequivocally no.
No. So the distributed firewall drops the connection instantly at the source.
Ooh.
But it doesn't just block it silently. Because VDefend includes advanced threat prevention, it uses network traffic analysis, or NTA.
Explain how that catches the attacker, because they have legit credentials, right?
Right. Traditional security relies on signatures looking for a known piece of bad code. But an attacker using stolen credentials looks like a legitimate user.
Exactly.
NTA, however, utilizes behavioral baselining. It knows exactly what normal traffic patterns look like for that specific engineer's laptop.
So it knows the engineer usually doesn't RDP into a SCADA server at 2 a.m.
Precisely. When it suddenly detects anomalous lateral movement, an IT laptop aggressively probing OT engineering servers, the NTA engine flags the behavior as a critical threat, even without a known malware signature.
So the alarms are ringing in the security operations center.
Hard and clear.
But the attacker is persistent, maybe even automated by AI. They pivot and attempt to drop a secondary payload, perhaps a sophisticated worm specifically designed to exploit a known vulnerability in a historian server down in the level 3.5 DMZ.
And this is where the defense in-depth architecture truly shines.
What happens?
As that malicious payload attempts to traverse the network, VDefend's malware prevention engine intercepts it. Instead of just blocking it, it drops the file into a highly isolated network sandbox.
Like a bomb squad chamber.
Exactly. It detonates the file in a safe environment, observes its malicious behavior, and permanently blocks it from ever reaching the DMZ.
Okay, let's play devil's advocate here. Let's say the attacker somehow found a legitimate, explicitly permitted pathway into the IDMZ, perhaps through an authorized web portal. They launched the attack through that open door.
Even then, the architecture holds. That authorized web connection still hits the AVI service engine.
Right, the proxy airlock.
Exactly. The service engine completely severs the TCP connection. It acts as the proxy, inspects the payload using its built-in web application firewall, identifies the malicious injection attempt buried in the permitted traffic, and neutralizes it before it can ever initiate a connection to the back-end OT systems.
That's incredible. The attack chain is fundamentally broken at multiple independent levels.
Yes.
The initial reconnaissance is blinded by micro-segmentation. The lateral movement is caught by behavioral analysis. The payload is detonated in a sandbox. And the permitted pathways are scrubbed by a proxy firewall.
It's locked down tight.
So the corporate enterprise IT team isolates the compromised laptop up in level 4, but the actual physical power grid, it never even blinked. It stays completely online, utterly unaware that an attack even occurred.
It's just a phenomenal synthesis of operational technology and zero trust software. It builds an architecture that openly assumes a breach will happen, but contains the blast radius so rigorously that a localized IT breach never escalates into a physical catastrophe.
So what does this all mean for you? It means the boundary between the digital and the physical world is more critical than ever before. We rely on these converging systems for our water, our power, our global manufacturing. The threats are evolving at machine speed, leveraging AI to chain vulnerabilities together in ways humans simply cannot predict.
Absolutely.
But by combining these rigorous NIST frameworks with incredibly smart software-defined tools like VDefend and ABI, we can actually defend that invisible boundary without stopping the flow of data that modern businesses require to progress. The massive stone wall might be invisible now, but if architected correctly, it is vastly more resilient than it ever was.
And I'll leave you with this final thought to mull over. We know attackers are aggressively utilizing AI to discover and chain vulnerabilities at unprecedented speeds. But think about the future trajectory of these software-defined defensive architectures we just explored.
Where is it going?
Well, what if, instead of merely enforcing static zero-trust rules, the infrastructure itself begins using advanced AI to autonomously redesign the network's micro-segmentation topology in real time?
But why?
Imagine a network that detects an intrusion and dynamically shifts its own internal walls as the attack unfolds, isolating the threat by creating a constantly moving, invisible maze that an attacker can never accurately map.
That is a wild thought. A living, breathing fortress that actively changes its own blueprint while you are in the middle of trying to break in.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time.